Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Ich bin Elke de la Sota.
And I'm Chad Turnbull.
Mit Savorian Wines haben wir zwei katalanische Weine, Bogatell aus Terralta und El Raval aus Montsant, in die Staaten gebracht. Beide sind biodynamisch und unter $15 zu bekommen. Wir arbeiten mit Winzern in der vierten Generation zusammen. Chad und ich sind sehr stolz auf die Zusammenarbeit mit Jason Colucci und der Morning After Show. Die gleiche Hingabe, die Jason für seine Show aufbringt, haben wir für unsere Weine.
Für mehr Infos und wo es unsere Weine gibt, klick auf den Link Savoyan Wines.
That was not an old Nazi world propaganda that you're listening to. That was actually my sponsors for Savorian Wines, and they're, you know, proudly an international company. They operate out of Germany, out of Spain, out of the United States market. So, you know, I make a joke, but that's actually people in Germany are tuning in to the Morning After. So I'd like to thank LK and Chad for that great intro. Savorian Wines, El Raval, Bogatell. Bogatell is my favorite. I drank this wine all summer, and I was very pleased. I never had a headache, and I could drink this thing like it's water. A Poland Spring, perhaps. it was a great week. We did a bunch of stuff. Actually, we were shooting the promo video for the Morning After all day yesterday in the city, which was fun because I got to see a lot of old restaurant friends. On top of the fact that I felt like a politician, I was kissing babies, walking around different neighborhoods. I was in Canal Street. We were Midtown, Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge, Tribeca, my old stomping grounds. And that should be out next week. Stephen Kahn is editing the promo video. That should be done. And I also want to thank a good friend and John Paradiso. John Paradiso is a jeweler on the corner of Canal and Bowery. And if you're doing an engagement ring, if you're buying a watch, any needs that you have in the jewelry community, I know he accommodates basically all of the New York sports teams, the Giants. I'm not sure 100% about, you know, hockey and stuff like that, but I've seen some. I'm not a huge sports fan, so I've seen big guys in his jewelry store who I've been told have been sports figures. So I just want to give a shout out to John Paradiso and his jewelry shop for actually his support. I'd really appreciate it. And our first guest today is a gentleman named Bert Wolf. And I had a call in a pre-interview this week, which was interesting because I had to call him internationally through my cell phone. And I was told by 100 people, do not call internationally on your cell phone. Get a phone card. I got a phone card. I ran out. I bought it at a bodega. And I didn't have any change on me. And when I scratched the number for the PIN number, I used a key and I scratched off the PIN number. And I had Bert Wolf's a major player. I mean, he worked for PBS for 20, 30 years. He's done a lot of work. And I'm running around scrambling. So I said, you know what, I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to call international on my cell phone. It's not the end of the world. I'll call Switzerland. That's where Bert Wolf lives. And my phone was like, you are not able to call, make an international phone call. Please dial *67. And I'm like, oh, what do I do? So then I'm on the corner of Mott and Houston. So I run down to another bodega, and they don't have any. So then I run down to Houston and Ludlow. I buy another card. I walk down about a block south, and I go inside a building, and I'm doing an international interview with an extremely high-profile person, Bert Wolf, in somebody's apartment building, and I'm interviewing him via my cell phone. And it's funny, you have ambulances in the background, music playing, and it was great. And I'd like to thank Bert Wolf for calling in. Actually, we called him, but I'd like to be a guest today. Bert, are you there?
Yeah, but you know what you should know is when you called me, I was in the shower.
I could tell. I was wondering. It was a little foggy when I spoke to you. But you had brought up a hysterical point. You're in Switzerland, and the first thing that you had brought up was the recycling that's going on there. There's, I'll let you talk about it.
Well, I got here, I guess, 90 days ago, and I'm still moving in. I was naive enough to think it would take me a week and I'd be all set up, but I'm still moving in. And the first thing that I was learning the first day, you know, how to use the telephone, how to do this, how to do that, all very different, all things that, you know, take for granted there for many years, and now suddenly it's all new, including the language, because I don't speak Schweizerdeutsch. And they're explaining to me the garbage, and I can't believe it. There are 9 different boxes.
When you say 9 different boxes, there are 9 different subcategories of recycling.
Yes.
Okay.
And
so
you have to put the right garbage in the right box.
And what's right? What's the fine if you don't do that? Is there a fine?
I think your neighbors call the police. and I don't know what the police did, because I'm in a remedial garbage disposal group because I didn't do particularly well.
And you brought
but
up
you have yeah.
No, but you're saying you brought up a good point about a subcategory of garbage that you were doing, which was I won't say it. I'll let you say it. Which was a different. Was it made in something?
Oh, that you're talking about my garbage in New York City.
Yeah, which was
in New York. There was a regular bin for paper. There was a bin for general garbage from, you know, your kitchen, and there was one for glass and I believe plastic and tin. And in my building, I introduced a fourth one, things made in China. because my wife subscribes to this notification from a bureau in Washington, the government, some part of the government, which every day talks to you about recalls or things that are poisonous and dangerous for you or your children or your family. And there was so much stuff that was in the house from China that I felt she needed her own garbage disposal box.
Yeah, you
in
almost
the basement to just do the stuff from China.
You almost had your own province within your apartment. But you're in Switzerland because you're producing. I think it's because you're involved in 2 shows right now. One of them is called Art Cops, and the other one is called The Great Rivers of Europe. And those are 2 PBS-based shows. Am I correct?
Right. Yep. Art Cops is about stolen art, obviously. Each year, about $10 billion dollars worth of art is stolen. Very little of it comes back. There are huge rewards, and nobody knows about it. We only have 1 part-time policeman in New York City who sort of kind of is the art squad when they let him.
So I should give back. I should give back my dog's playing poker, the velvet painting. Is that part of that $10 billion number?
I'm sure it is, yes.
Okay.
But have it evaluated at Christie's before you do anything, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
That art is out there. It's extraordinarily valuable. It's very easy to steal art. It's very hard to sell it. So we're trying to set up a system where people will help us find the art and share in the rewards. The rewards are hundreds of millions of dollars. Somebody at PBS described it as a cross between Antique Roadshow and America's Most Wanted.
now you're a restaurant guy. You are involved in a restaurant here in the U.S. And actually, if anyone wants to see this restaurant, it's in the if they rent The Firm with Gene Hackman and Tom Cruise. The first time Gene Hackman takes Tom Cruise out and buys him a drink, that's actually the restaurant. What's the name of the group? It's in
Memphis. Renan's, and it's in Memphis, Tennessee.
And you're no longer involved in that, but that's basically your foundation, and that translates a lot into the shows that you're doing for PBS, which are travel shows, but are essentially rooted in food. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think if you want to know about a culture, the 2 things. If you can find out their gastronomy, what they're eating and drinking, and their religion and what they're worshiping, you really got it pretty much knocked. So I'm fascinated by anything in the history of food and anything that has to do with religion. And I think the restaurant is just something I had to get out of my system. And then, Dan, let me tell you, it's out of my system. The restaurants are very special.
You were talking about that when we spoke.
It's just not for me. But there are a lot of people who are really great at it. And I am now limiting myself to eating and drinking in restaurants. And it's not my intention to ever own or build one again.
And speaking,
that was very interesting.
Speaking of eating and drinking in restaurants, you, when you're doing your cruises, you do this 3 or 4 times a day. You're traveling around. Can you talk a little about what you, what the cruise is about, and how that ties into the show? And you know how.
Sure. We're trying to raise money for public television, and one of the things we're doing is setting up river cruises in Europe. They run a week, and I host them. I think if you go to the website, BertWolf.com, you'll see all of the cruises that I'm hosting this year and next year for PBS. And you pay for the cruise, and a portion of that payment, the money that would normally go to a travel agent or anybody you book through, goes to the PBS station where you live. There's a bunch of stuff going to WNET, WLIW from the New York metropolitan area. And then you get to hang out with me for a week, which may or may not be fun, depending on your viewpoint. But you get to actually go all the places that I go in the television show. And we have a crew with us, and we're shooting when we travel. So it's always a lot of fun.
Any place in particular you think about recently that just comes in your head restaurant-wise, whether it be in Italy or Greece or Germany, that it pops out?
Well, I'm working my way through the restaurants in Lucerne and Zurich. And Lucerne's pretty interesting. It was one of the original states, or they're called cantons, of Switzerland. And they do this really traditional mountain food. I think you should run 10 or 15 miles on the way into the restaurant and an equal amount on the way out, because it's potatoes and cheese and chocolate and homemade beer. And it's the way people ate when they were running around chasing cows. But it's really good food and quite interesting. And, you know, Switzerland's famous for its chocolate. So I'm eating my way through their chocolate stores, and they're pretty serious about it. You know, Switzerland has the largest per capita consumption of chocolate of any country in the world.
Wow, and what's the population? Do you know the population?
Seven and a half million.
That's a really interesting fact, and the comparisons of
all the other countries. It's a very small country. I think 7 million people lived in my building in Manhattan. So they're about the same size.
Now, Bert, are you ever going to come back to the States? And if you do, you know, what state? Where would you live?
Well, I was born on the island of Manhattan.
Ooh.
So I don't know that I'm allowed to go back anyplace else. I only have a passport for Manhattan.
Well, if you come back, we should do our show, The Great East River. We'll go down. We'll get a boat. We'll take people down. We'll start. We'll start north, and we'll work our way down.
You have to get a bunch of shots to inoculate you for whatever's going on in the river.
For everyone,
but I understand it's getting cleaner.
Those dredgers do wonders, I understand, but I wouldn't recommend swimming across it. For everyone who's listening, we're talking right now to Bert Wolf. Bert Wolf's an American journalist, writer, chef, and TV producer. His journeys have brought him across the world and back, and he's here right now on a call. He's living currently in Switzerland just to conduct two shows that he's producing for PBS. Now, Bert, what's your relationship with PBS? I mean, you've been there for a long time. Is it do they come to you to pitch you ideas, or you kind of come to them on stuff?
No, I actually make 8 to 13 half hours a year, and I donate them to PBS. So they love me because they don't have to pay me any money. They don't have to sit around with me. I just make them and give it to them. And they air them, and I've done that, I guess, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
And anyone that wants to do one of your cruises in the next coming weeks or next year, is there, other than BertWolf.com, is there any other avenues they should take? How far in advance should they?
No, that's it. Everything is on that website.
Okay, great. Bert, I'd like to thank you for calling in. Could we follow up with you in three or 4 months and just talk after sort of once in a while about ARCOPS? I mean, maybe you can leak.
I'm right here. I'm right here, Ted. Call whenever you like.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Thanks again, Bert. We're gonna take a break now. We're gonna go into our next guest, Chef Nelke Rosario from Stout Restaurant in New York City. We're gonna talk about what it's like to run a place where there's 2,000 people coming in a day. Morning after.
Cada abusador le llega a su calderona. Si quieren tirarle a alguien, tírenme a mí. Yo soy el enemigo, no pido changuirí y salsa. Les voy a dar con mi comparsa. Ustedes visten de demo, pero Caldes es el que lo juega. Tú no me alcanzas, conformate con la chanza. Que no te mejor la garganta, tú lista. No estaba este liricita. Si tú no puedes, que tu panel ni se vista. Con tu flow antiguo como el vudú. Viejo como el bugalú, el malo de Guasibribú. Canciones, pero no conviven ni en omisiones. Si te atreves a darme, dame. Voy a estar si pela abajo pa' que antes me lo. Muchas sopa letras pa' yo soy un viejo. Protean con enojo, pero tienen miedo. No son nadie si no tiran, me oyen y se arremilla. Andan frío lento, mi lírica los cohía. Pa' que balas locas como San Bigote. Sopla potes, el dueño del.
Hola, soy Chad Turnbull.
Y yo soy Elke de la Sota.
Hemos introducido a los Estados Unidos dos catalán vinos, Bogatell y El Raval.
Los vinos son biodinámicos y de muy bien precio. Somos muy orgullosos de estar aquí con Jason. Si estáis interesados en Bogatell o El Raval, haz clic en el link Savorian Wines.
We're back. That was another promo from our sponsor, Savorian Wines. I just wanted, I don't want to confuse everybody, but we're getting the message out there. Rightfully so, we've hit a lot of different countries, and we've found the need to sort of to expand the brand of The Morning After and also our sponsor, and Chad and LK were here all morning doing those spots, and that's really why you're hearing a few different languages. It's great. I mean, it's just amazing to know that people in Barcelona are tuning in. I want to cut right into our second guest, Chef Nelke Rosario. Chef, I had met him about a year and a half ago. We had dinner together at Hotel Jerfo. We were at a bunch of people, and I just happened to realize that he was a chef of a place called Stout, which is right down the block from Madison Square Garden. And it's a place, it's on 133rd West 33rd Street. And it's a spot you want to go to for two reasons. One, if you're going to a Knicks game and you want to have a beer before, or if you're not going to the game at all and you just want to hang out and watch a sporting event, or if you just want to have some comfort food. I mean, everything from burgers to chef has this amazing little tuna, small sliders, I would say. But the food is outstanding. And Chef, thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me here, guys. My pleasure.
You moved here from the Dominican Republic when you were a kid, about 12 or 13, moved around a lot, but you were in Boston, and you came to New York City. And you're like myself. You started kind of in the dish pit, where everybody starts. You know, you're washing dishes, you're a kid, you're kind of like getting all the intuitions from chefs and bartenders and barbacks and everything and working your way up. Cut to now, you're running, working for a major restaurant group in New York City and running a major kitchen. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, when you started and the sort of where you're at now and the things you've learned?
Well, basically, I came to the United States in 1991, a kid myself, just with my father, and trying to be successful, go somewhere. So this is me in high school in Massachusetts, finish up, move into New York with my brother, and I'm trying to save money to go back home, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm asking people, I need a part-time job. I need to do this and that. I had three jobs and going to school. And one of the jobs was washing dishes at this company called Heartland Brewery, which is around for a while. And that's where I started my career, basically. So I'm in the kitchen doing dishes, scrubbing floors from the bottom. And within 3 months, you know, move up the ladder. Prep guy. They make me a salad guy, Gourmet J. Then fry station, saute, grill. Within a year of doing that, they make me a closing expediter. And then meanwhile, I started going to college already. And 4 years from that point of view, I was going to start making $28,000, let's say. That's what
And you're saying $28,000 was in the profession you were in? It was not restaurant related.
Not restaurant, yeah. Going to school for. And I was already making about $24,000 closing expediter. I'm talking about maybe 2000, 2001. And
As a kid.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I see something going on here, not just money-wise. I'm learning. People are taking care of me. They're teaching me all these things. And basically, culinary just grew into me, like amazingly, like crazy. Just like became passionate about it.
I could see your roots of sort of coming up from the bottom because we went into your kitchen and you gave me a tour. And if for anyone that, you know, a lot of people that listen to it work in the to the show, work in the business, the kitchen is immaculate. And how many covers a day do you guys do on, say, a Friday or, let's say, a Thursday, kind of average?
Thursday, let's say a typical lunch, 11:30, already have people working in the door. By 3 o'clock, we can do easily from 300 to 500 lunches.
And then dinner?
And dinner, it depends, like in the night, has a lot to do with anything going on around the area, yeah. Any events. But we can easily do 500.
So, I mean, about 1,200 people a day, and the kitchen, you know, was immaculate. And then we sat down, and I always say it's really tough to do the food that you're doing because people have so many associations with it. You know, you do really esoteric food as a French chef, and people have nothing to associate with it. But if somebody walks into your place and they order, say, buffalo wings and a burger and stuff, they go right to somewhere. And it's tough to please everybody. And I had the burger there, and it was outstanding. Can you talk a little bit about how you sort of get your voice into the food when you're doing that that type of food, style of food, comfort food?
I mean, everything starts like early in the morning. You walk into the kitchen. Let's say, for instance, the special of the day. You walk in and you look at the kitchen, what you have, what people are looking for, comfortable food, people, things that people are familiar with that you said before. And you just make it happen, you know, by combining things together. Like, I have Baldo, which is one of the best civil company in the city, one of the biggest one in New York.
Yep. And Baldor.
Yes. Yep. And they call me up. We bought too many strawberries for the week. We need to sell. So I'm like, all right, send me a flat of it. So you're going to have strawberries. I recently happened to have some cheese special in the house that I was doing stuff with it, and I have extra one. So I put strawberry cheese, took some chicken breast, honey peppers here, and just put it together. Things that people are familiar with, they just take A, B, and C, put it together, and you get D, and people love it.
Does that make you, as a chef, do you feel creatively fulfilled? Or do you, being that, your heritage and your background and stuff, I mean, do you like cooking that food? Do you feel fulfilled creatively?
Yes, very, yeah. Very much. It's one of the things, like food, that you can play with. It's not like you're taking two different cars and putting it together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really, it's fun. I love it. When I'm in the kitchen, it's like I'm in a different world.
I'm talking to Chef Nelke Rosario from Stout Restaurant right now. It's a restaurant located in Midtown on 33rd Street, 133rd West 33rd Street. Also, I just wanted, when you're at home, are you cooking Dominican food, arroz con habichuelas? I don't know, mafango. If you're not and you're going out to eat, can you talk to our listeners about places that you would recommend that are cooking that style of food?
There's Brooklyn here where I kind of grew up. It's an amazing place. All different cultures all over the place. It's restaurants. But like when I go out to eat, I love to try different food. But like I miss my tradition, like you say, rice and beans, pork chop. We call it yellow plantains. It's fun to have. But yes, like when I'm home once in a while, I love cooking Spanish food as well. I like to have a nice piece of steak on the grill, even though it's like middle of the winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because you're kind of in the middle. For myself, I feel growing up in my mother cooking Italian food, it's tough for me to go out and eat Italian food. But if you do go out and, you know, you're forced, you're, you know, I know your nephew has his birthday today. What's his name?
Benjamin Rosario.
Benjamin Rosario?
Name after my father.
So if you guys went out to, somewhere that, somebody brought you out. I was trying to impress you, and I did make the wrong mistake, and I bring you out to what I think is the hottest Dominican restaurant in the city. Is there a place that you would recommend to everybody?
Well, it depends where you go to. Like I say, when you were at the restaurant the other day, we were talking about in the Heights, there's this place called Mama Juana.
In the barrio?
They have, in the barrio. Mama Juana is like an amazing Dominican restaurant where they have some, I would say, American influence, but like it's typical Dominican food. You can go there, have fun. Great music, great view. The restaurant themselves has a really great atmosphere.
Yeah. I want to thank Chef Nelke Rosario, Chef, for coming into the morning after. Is there a place, other than going online, any other, is it stout.com or any other avenues that we can do research?
Basically just stout.com. We're also on Facebook. It's Stout NYC.
Okay. And other than that, any major sporting event, you just can go there. I mean, you know,
any kind of sport that happens, football, baseball, basketball, even international football, soccer, they air on all the countries, let's say, whatever, 5 p.m, which is maybe 1 a.m. here. If they're really big events, big games, we have them on.
Well, as long as they have Trinidad and Tobago on, I'm there.
yes, we do.
Thanks, Chef. Right now, we're going to go into our next bit at 86list.com with Laura Wirtz.86list.com with Laura Wirtz. We're here with the Hot Job of the Week. Laura, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Laura Wirtz, Hot Job of the Week. Go ahead.
All right. This week's hot job comes from Kraft Restaurant, Tom Colicchio's flagship American in the Gramercy Park neighborhood. Kraft is seeking career-minded line cooks with at least 1 year of experience, and they're looking for full-time people with PM service positions available.
Now, for all of our international listeners, Top Chef is a show that takes place here in the U.S. on the Food Network, and it's really a popular show. And Tom Colicchio was a chef of a landmark restaurant called the Gramercy Tavern. And he also has his restaurants, which are Kraft. They have the name Kraft at some point of it, his sandwich shop being called Witchcraft. Am I correct?
That's correct. Kraft Steak and Witchcraft, Kraft Bar also.
And you said they're looking for line cooks, right?
They are. They're looking for line cooks at very seasonal American cuisine with a real focus on just really making the great products that they use shine.
And
so it's a great place to learn.
And line cooks, for everyone else, are in a long list of where the food comes in, prep cook. They brought it up. Line cook pulls it. Line cook is probably somebody that's directly cooking your food. The sous chef is making sure it's there. They're using the proper ingredients, the proper proportions, and then they're expediting it to a server, and the server's bringing it to your table. So, I mean, other than our industry people that are listening, that's essentially what the job is. Laura Wirtz, thank you, 86list.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to a friend from a company called Blue Moon Acres. Her name's Ashley Lyons. They do provide microgreens for all the major restaurants from La Bernardin to Danielle. Morning after.
Look at my life, I'm a lot like you were. Oh man, look at my life, I'm a lot like you were. Oh man, look at my life, 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost such a cause.
And we're back. The morning after, we're back. I'm going to go right into our next guest, who's a college client from Pennsylvania. Her name's Ashley Lyons. She works, she's a second generation person from her family's company called Blooming Acres, which operates out of Pennsylvania. Microgreens are essentially something you see finished on a plate. Now, Paul Liebrandt had a very composed dish when they first opened. I think he called it the Garden of Eden or something. And a lot of the pieces on that amazing looking dish were composed from a company called Blue Moon Acres. Ashley, are you there?
I am. Good to be with you, Jason.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about the genesis of when your mom and dad started, about what you said 20 years ago up in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. Yeah, we started as a CSA, actually, 20 years ago.
What's a CSA?
As a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. So,
thank you.
You know, people would give a certain money at the beginning of the season for their produce from us. And we were small. We must have had maybe 10 people
And that evolved into, you know, growing microgreens after some time they spent with my aunt and uncle, who they worked with. They had apprenticed on a local farm where they were experimenting growing microgreens. So it just came from that.
Just so we can start from where the end result of restaurants that are using this, and briefly, can you say on your end what restaurants that are using it and where they compose it mostly in their dishes?
How are they using microgreens?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it primarily as an aesthetic, but I think it's really evolved beyond certain, you know, run-of-the-mill microgreens to very exotic kinds. And, you know, we're very chef-driven, and so they oftentimes have introduced us to varieties we've never even heard of. And so it's very much a collaboration in that sense, what we grow. And so it's evolved from just aesthetics to really accenting the flavor of a dish, which is, you know, really exciting to collaborate with chefs on. It's great.
I think David Blay told me once, I'm sorry, I'm name-dropping, the idea behind a microgreen or something that's smaller is that they're really encompassing all of the energy of what that particular item will be. So micro celery root or something, you're really getting the young flavor of it, and it's not sort of grown up in a lot of different directions. You're getting the essence of where it is, the base of it, and it's maybe... over, not necessarily over the top, but it's at its truest form when it's in you know, when it's a microgreen. Do you agree with that?
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, it certainly, if you come from, you know, a purist perspective, it's definitely there in the microgreens for sure. Yeah,
and you, I mean, speaking about the United States economy right now and small businesses and stuff, you employ, it's a small business, about, I think the last time we spoke was like 13 to 15 people. Is it more or less now, or?
They're right in the middle of that, about 20 or 25.
Wow. So, these are people that have worked for your family for a long time.
They have, yeah. You know, we're a family. We really are, and we've added new members for our new property over in Pennington, but it's relatively small. You know, we keep it small. We do a certain number of things, and we do them well. We don't have great ambitions to be huge, so we're going to keep it small. We think that's the best way to go.
And you brought up the new location that you guys are doing. You said New Jersey.
In Pennington, right, outside of Princeton.
And I remember when you guys had started doing this, it was about 4 or 5 years ago, and you're sort of broadening your base, where you're doing like a mescaline mix or baby carrots and a lot of other stuff. Has that sort of changed, changed the company a little bit in terms of what you guys are selling, or is essentially still, we're, you know, doing microgreens?
We wish to keep the same, you know, set up, in the sense that we do the same kinds of microgreens. We're still chef-driven. We wanted to be more full-service. You know, there were chefs looking for premium baby heads of lettuce, for instance, or a premium spring mix, you know, and a seasonally available local spring mix. It was something that I think is not very easy to find. You're maybe getting it from California. Yeah. And harvested to order spring mixes was something chefs were very excited about. So it's been successful, with the exception of this season, which is a little rough, Irene. But you do what you can do, and it's the Wild West growing outside. Very much different than growing microgreens.
Now, I would always like to thank your family for bringing me in. The few times I've come up there and seen the place, you know, there's about 3 or 4 large greenhouses, and this is in Mr. and Mrs. Lyons' backyard. There's a trailer in the back where you guys do all the sales out of, and we had tea at the house, and you know, it's an amazing experience. And it's one of the things where when you're say paying a dollar or two extra than a broadline company that's doing the same, you know the money's going in the right place. Now, if somebody wanted to start an account, or even sort of a regular person just wanted to try the stuff, is there any specific place they should look?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a chef, we already have, you know, deliveries locally in you know, New York, Philadelphia.
The Tuesday and Friday?
As well. If you're local, you can just come right by the farm. We're open 2 days a week, Tuesday, Friday. We're wanting to connect a little bit more locally, so we've opened our store up to them, and also going to have one in Pennington pretty soon.
Awesome. Well, I'd like to thank Ashley Lyons from Blooming Acres for calling in. Well, you're always welcome to call in and give updates on seasonality of everything. Other thing you'd like to contribute? Or
thanks for having me. No, it was a pleasure.
Anytime. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jason.
Anytime. So let's talk a little bit about a couple of things. I want to talk about future guests. It's really tough, and rightfully so, because chefs are tough to get down and restaurant people are tough to get down. But we've booked a couple of people, and yeah, you never know. Maybe they'll cancel, but I just wanted to put this out there. We have Chef David Burke next week. I've booked Jimmy Bradley. Jimmy Bradley's the owner of the Harrison and the Red Cat. Drew Nieporn, my old boss. He is one of the co-owners of the Nobu Empire, Tribeca Grill, Cortone. So those are some of the voices you'll hear. Of course, you could follow me on Twitter at thejasoncalucci.com. You can just friend me on Facebook, and then also you can check our production website, which is righteousfiction.com. on Facebook, and you can like us, and that's basically the parent company of a lot of productions that we're doing, hence the documentary on the restaurant opening. The Terroir Kids are doing a wine related show that is not affiliated with Terroir, but all of the personalities that you heard here last week, we're putting that together. So there's a lot of different, there's so many different ways and streams of information, so many different directions, it's tough. So I decided to, with my business partner, Chad Turnbull, at Righteous Fiction, to sort of limit it in the beginning and then sort of open it up a little bit more with a lot of the shows that we're doing. We're going to go into break now, and we're going to talk to a couple of people that I highly respect. They run a bar called The Aaron Rose in New Orleans, Louisiana. We'll take a break the morning after.
Till the clouds unroll and you come down the line but the shadow still remains since your descent.
We're back the morning after. We're going to go into our next guest, two owners of my favorite bar in New Orleans by far, and one of the top, my top five bars in the U.S. The name of that bar is called Aaron Rose. Aaron Rose is a spot if you're walking down Canal, and I'm going to talk in my southern voice. You're walking down a canal, you make a right on Bourbon, and I think you go down maybe a block or two, and then you make a left. And you'll see on the right-hand side is a little alcove there, and in that alcove, you got a bar called Aaron Rose. And Aaron Rose is a spot where if you're sitting there, from 12 noon to 5, you'll just see some of the most amazing people coming out of there, whether it's tourists or industry people. And the thing I always say about New Orleans, it's an industry town. It's a service industry town. So if you work in New York City, you work anywhere, and you come in there and you're sitting at a bar, just tell them that you work in service, and the doors just open wide open. Before you know it, you'll miss your flight, and you'll have a bar back job somewhere. But I wanted to introduce, are you there, Angie?
Yeah, hello there.
Angie Kohler from Aaron Rose.
Hello, how are y'all doing today?
We're doing very well here up in the New York City. Those Yankees are doing good. Can you just get into a little bit of the history with Aaron Rose? Jim Monahan was the original owner?
Yes, he was. Jim Monahan, he was originally from Zanesville, Ohio. He came down to the French Quarter in 1969, fell in love with the characters of the city, therefore falling in love with the city. He then, over about a 30-year period of time, he owned 30 bars. Aaron Rose is one of them. Well, night December 13, 2001, he did die, and he handed the bar over to his business partner, my husband, Troy Kaler. Him and Troy were business partners and worked together for many years, and I was one of their bartenders. So that's where the story goes.
And about 5 years ago, I was down there, probably the second time I had been down there, and Troy, your husband, had given me the reins to run the float for Halloween with a friend, David Deal. And you gave me about three, let's say, huge boxes filled with beads. And what I didn't realize, and in my Americanness, I just was throwing like five at a time. And by the time we got to the third block, I'm like, I'm out of beads. I'm kind of out of beads. Halloween is and you know it's a couple weeks away is by far probably in my opinion a very local time in New Orleans because you know you have you know Mardi Gras you have Jazz Fest but I really felt that the locals you know had a lot of fun and kind of contributed. Do you agree with that at all or is that?
Oh, absolutely. The locals are why these holidays exist to begin with. It's the people that fall in love with these traditions that come year after year more and more in droves. And Halloween has long been a local favorite. It doesn't matter what night of the week it is. There's going to be a parade, and there are going to be plenty of people costumed and just in a feel-good state of mind, just having the best time.
Yeah, and then even the night before, what we call here Mischief Night in New York, I don't know. I know you have maybe a different Halloween Eve, there's a cocktail at Aaron Rose, and I was drinking whiskey when I was there and beer, but there's a cocktail that you guys specialize in. Is it an Irish coffee? Is it?
Yes, the frozen Irish coffee, and it's a delectable treat, especially when you're hungover, or if you just don't want to get too blotto during the day. But it's just a wonderful frozen treat.
Where and how long have you owned the bar now?
Well, we are, my husband and I together have had it now for 10 years. Like I said, him and Mr. Monahan were business partners for a long time. And after he passed, we've been taking care of it and just doing what we do best and just being in the service industry, giving back what we would like to see and be, receive when we go in other establishments.
And it's literally like if you go there, all right. So I'm giving everyone their itinerary. Fly into New Orleans, whatever day, you get to your hotel, you check in 10, 11 o'clock, walk around a little bit, do the little Bourbon Street thing, and about noon or 1 o'clock, go to Aaron Rose, sit at the bar and spend your time there for about 4 or 5 hours, go home, shower, and do whatever you want to do, and then come back. That's sort of my itinerary when I'm in New Orleans. So Aaron Rose, really, I feel like it's like meet the press. It sets the standard for the night. Like you listen, you're there, and then all of the industry people, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, chefs or whoever, they take their break there. They have a cocktail. They have a shot, whatever. There's a lawyer that's sitting at the bar. You really get engulfed in it, and if you work in service, you get a handshake and a hug at the same time. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about community, and the service industry is a large community. So with the service industry and the locals that partake, come to the bar, whether they're lawyers, doctors, artists, musicians, along with the visitors, especially the visitors too, because they help make up the cast of characters. Once they fall in love, they keep coming back. So it just adds more to the dynamic of Aaron Rose.
So, Angie, what's the address and the website and any other tidbits of information you have?
Okay, well, again, it's Aaron Rose. The address is 811 Conti. It's spelled like Conti, but, we are Conti. New Orleans, so yeah. It is Conti.
And it's a left off of Bourbon, right? If you look
correct. It's about 25 feet off of Bourbon Street, which would be at the 400 block of Bourbon Street.
I always would love that because I would be, out late, and it'd be like, somebody would be like, where's this bar? And I'd be like, where's Nola? They'd be like, oh, you want Nola? That's on the 2000th street of Decatur. I'd be like, what does that mean? Can you tell me? Is that sort of the original grid?
Is
that
you can walk the whole quarter within a matter of 20 minutes if you don't stop in and get a cocktail.
But that's the original grid.
Along the route, because we have short city blocks.
Right, I mean, that's really what it is, that association, the number is a grid number of, where the block number goes. I mean, we don't operate like that here in the in New York. I don't know, maybe. Is that, thanks again for coming. I am in the midst. I checked my kayak.com this week about getting a flight down there just to come in and shoot in, maybe doing a morning after remote interview.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And then bill it to my sponsor, Bogotá Wine. Don't tell them I said that. But thanks again. I wanted to thank yourself and Troy for taking me in when I was down there for the two or three times and making me feel amazing. And I don't think anyone, everyone that goes there has that feeling, especially if you work in service industry. Thanks again.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jason. And we had a great time then, and we're looking for you to come back down. Hey, we got a Halloween parade coming up.
Oh, wow. Look who just walked in. We're going to take a break now. We just had a celebrity guest just walk in right now. We're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. Morning After.
Like a sound you hear that lingers in your ear, but you can't forget from sundown to sunset. Nah, nah. It's all in the air. You hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gone.
Wow, wow, wow. We had somebody walk in. To me, he's a celebrity. Johnny Santiago from Joe's Restaurant on Elizabeth Street has just... I don't know, wow. Johnny, were you eating in the... Were you doing?
Where's the wine? I heard you guys have wine here.
Yes, guys, good, hand them some. You want El Raval or you want Bogotá?
You can whatever's Bogotá. Open.
Okay, perfect. So what brings you to Roberta's? Were you in the neighborhood today?
I woke up like two blocks away.
Yeah. So we call that an away game.
I don't know what game it was, but it involved, what's that, pin the tail on the donkey?
Well, I was going to, yeah. Harry, hello. I was going to do this bit, which was I'm going to pick between 40th Street and 50th Street, 30th Street and 40th Street, and you have to pick a spot. That dude, you like, whether it's a restaurant or...
I just walked in here. What are you talking about?
You're a restaurant... Come on. First of all, you started...
I'm never stopping by
again. You opened a landmark jazz club in the late 90s called Torch.
That burned down.
Ow! And you also are the owner with Jim Chu of Joe's, which is on Elizabeth Street, right off of Houston, where a lot of us frequent. So if I'm between 30 and 40... Between 30 and 30 Street
more
and
games,
Street.
Dude. The games I had in the middle of the night. You're gonna give me more games. All right, fine. Hit me. Okay. Wait, let me take a swig of wine here. Okay.
Okay. Between 30th Street and 40th Street, where are you going?
Ooh. Keen's Pub Room.
Keen's. It's a steakhouse, right?
Yeah, but no, the Pub Room. You go to the Pub Room.
And what are you gonna do there?
Drink.
Okay.
Eat.
Between 20 and 30. 20th Street and 30th Street, where are you going?
Oh. Dude, what are these neighborhoods you're picking on me?
They're vast neighborhoods.
All right. 20, 30. Okay, two spots. Wait, are these dates? What are these? What are you doing?
Whatever. I mean, it could be
okay.
Whatever.
Well, I always just have a soft quiet. Spot for Leal because I used to work there a long time ago.
Leal, the Anthony Bourdain spot. It's actually
I was
preordained.
Exactly.
Preordained.
I was preordained. Yes, making steak
tartare.
That's
a spot that's on his book. Leal, you see him. It's
good.
A
it's awesome. I love that
Kitchen
place.
Confidential.
Right. Or if I'm feeling exotic, Ilili for some Lebanese.
There you go. The teens, where are you going between 10 and 20? And this is
since I'm drinking Spanish wine, I'm going to say either Casa Mono or my buddy Frank Crispo. His joint
Crispo's.
Is unbelievable.
I will vouch for you on both those places, specifically Casa Mono, which I feel like it does not get enough
Spain
attention.
Equals sexy.
It does.
It is.
And Spain also equals Bogotá.
And Spain equals Santiago.
and south, just downtown, other than Joe's, pick a place. Just downtown, general place. You're going out. You started uptown. You're working your way down.
It's
1 o'clock. It's 12:30. It's going into 1 a.m. You're driving. You're in a cab. You're with a lady friend and a buddy or whoever. And
I just had a recent wonderful experience at Smith & Mills with a beautiful lady.
Smith & Mills is on the corner of Greenwich and Northmore.
Don't tell people that, dude. Don't get it crowded.
Oh, it's right. It is physically.
I thought you were asking me for yourself. Come on.
It's physically impossible to get that place crowded.
It's fantastic.
Well, I can't believe that you're actually in the studio. I just wanted
to
thank
you. Is there pizza?
There will be pizza.
Fantastic.
Joe's Restaurant is where?
264 Elizabeth Street.
Well, thank you, Johnny Santiago, for being in studio. I just want to wrap up the show. I want to thank a lot of people. This show was, well, first of all, I want to thank Jack, because Jack had about 20 phone calls he had to make today in terms of international and stuff. And I like to make international calls sound exotic, even though it's a matter of dialing, you know,
Skype?
15 numbers instead of 7 numbers. Chef Nelke from Stout, anything you'd want to promote or say?
Thank you for having me here, guys. And if you, anyone of you guys listening want to come to Stout for, I would say we have about 150 different beers in bottle, maybe over 30 draft beers. You want to come in for a pint, some great food, like Jason said before, more than welcome.
Thank you very much. I also want to thank Ashley Lyons from Blue Moon Acres, Burt Wolf, burtwolf.com, Johnny Santiago from Joe's. Also, I want to thank Aaron Rose Bar, my favorite bar in New Orleans by far. Next week, we have David Burke on the show, 2-segment interview. He's going to talk about growing up in New York City in terms of the 80s and 90s industry. Once again, Jason Colucci, this is The Morning After. Thank you.
Stay tuned for the English version of that commercial in case it went over your head.
Thank you, Jack. Psychedelica.
I'm Chad Turnbull.
And ich bin Elke de la Sota.
And we brought two Catalan wines, Bogotel from Terra Alta and El Raval from Montsant, to the United States. Both wines are organic and voted best buys. We also use fourth generation Catalan winemakers.
Chad and I are very proud supporters of Jason Colucci and the Morning After Show. The same integrity that Jason brings to his show, we bring in our wines. To purchase or for more infos, just click on the link, Savorian Wines.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
As a part of National Food Day, St. John's Bread and Life, Brooklyn's innovative and life-saving food service program based in Bedford-Stuyvesant, is inviting Brooklyn chefs and purveyors to learn about how the organization is marrying the procurement of old-fashioned, locally grown organic produce with the latest technology to deliver healthy, cost-effective meals to those in need. St. John's Bread and Life, located at 795 Lexington Avenue, will hold an open house on Monday, October 24th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Visit www.foodday.org to sign up for the event. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Field to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's TASTESOF Brooklyn.blogspot.com.